Fair listeners, this is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. If this is a short episode, it's because we're both on the brink of insanity at the moment. As we record this, it is Monday evening at 9:20 p.m. Eastern. We have been sitting here for an hour trying to start this show, but technology will not cooperate, will not work. We've both restarted our computers multiple times. We've both cursed the heavens until our throats are hoarse. Oh. And my co-host is delirious with a fever on top of all that.
Yep. Yeah, I don't really know where I am right now. I'm pretty sure that the last hour was a fever dream, because that, like, could not have been worse timing.
No. So my name is Harley R. Paget, for the record. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I host four podcasts for the PW Torch, or I contribute to four, I guess. This one, Elite Repeat, the Mae Young podcast, PWT Talks NXT. And I haven't run into any of these issues before. I've been doing podcasts for the Torch for, oh, let's say 10 months now. And this is the first week we've had anything this severe. And I'm losing it. I'm losing it. Technology.
Yeah.
And we got a lot to talk about. We got a full pay-per-view. We've got an hour of ROH television all to talk about. Plus some New Japan news on top of that. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So... I'm beaten down. Let's let's do this.
All right, let's rally. We can do this.
This Friday, it was Death Before Dishonor 16 out of Las Vegas, Nevada. We had seven matches. Varying quality. Some of them were some great matches. A lot of them kind of suffered, I felt, due to lack of storyline support, due to rushed build. You know, some of these matches only announced on TV a week and a half before the pay-per-view. It's hard to, like, really build up a lot of hype for matches in that sense. And I will say this every week until things start to change, but ROH is in a serious deficit of heels at the moment, and I feel like that's hurting things.
Yeah, that's only gonna get worse too.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, you can have great matches between two baby faces, there's no denying that, but I will go on the record as saying that I always feel like a match between two guys the fans love is good, but a match where the fans are just fully invested in wanting one person to win and just totally do not want the other person to win, that's a whole different atmosphere.
Yeah, you kind of need those matches, those, like, hallmarks of wrestling to build your shows around. I mean, a face versus face match is totally legitimate, and we've seen it done well, very well, numerous times this year alone, not to mention, you know, all the other times in pro wrestling history. But if you don't have a, like, good, solid stable of heels, you're not going to get the fundamental matches that you need to, like, put these other matches in context with. You know, it's like an ecosystem. You need your heel and face matches to be able to do your other forms of, like, experimental or your other forms of matches, because it balances.
Well, so our first match at Death Before Dishonor, I mean, you could argue maybe suffered from this a little bit, if only for the fact that Kenny King has only recently turned heel. It's been a soft heel turn, right? He hasn't, like, he's not yelling at the fans. He's not doing anything terribly over the top villainous. Just a little bit of cheating here and there, a little bit of bending the rules.
Yeah.
And it was his hometown, so you know he had fan support and attendance.
Yeah, and it's so weird for him to get a heel win in his hometown.
Yeah, but he, you know, it was a, my issue with the match, I thought that was going to be a big issue for me with the match. It was going to be the crowd being split and King's soft heel stance at this point, but it wasn't really. My main thing with this match was I just thought it was slow. I know Jushin Thunder Liger is of a certain age, so he's not going to be Ricochet out there. He's not going to be Rey Mysterio out there either. But I think on both of their parts, I just felt it was a little slow and there wasn't a lot of energy, especially for the opener.
Yeah, I got the sense this was definitely a match where people were still getting their seats too. So the crowd energy, while being present, it wasn't a bad crowd at that Las Vegas venue at all. But the crowd wasn't at, like, peak energy yet. And it just, again, my problem with that is that, you know, you have the curtain jerker, you have your first match of the night, with a hometown guy, I would kind of expect to give him maybe, you know, the second match or the third match so that he, you don't suffer from that. And you actually get a boost in energy because the people in that, those seats are so thrilled to see their hometown guy. Like, that's kind of an easy way to like get back the momentum that you might lose after two or three matches.
Yeah. So, and that was my thing. I think I said this in my written report for the show, which was kind of a weird one to open the show with, but at the same time, it was the only singles match on the card that wasn't for a title.
Yeah.
The only non-title matches on the card were this, the 10-man tag, and the tables match. And you're not going to open the show with either of those.
No, you're definitely not going to open the show with a with either of the other ones. So they kind of pushed themselves into a corner.
Yeah, it almost would have been, I mean, if they had more time, it would have been, apparently Jonathan Gresham and Beer City Bruiser wrestled a dark match before the show. And that would have been almost a fitting opening match.
Yeah.
If it was a shorter length and Gresham gets a feel-good win. And so.
Yeah, that seems kind of just off to me. Like, you have these guys already fighting a dark match, a little bit of adjustment here and there, and you can fit it in. And that seems like a really good curtain jerker. I'm a little confused about that.
But so Kenny did pick up the win. He continues his streak. This time he picked up the win by pretending to do like a handshake, like the code of honor. Like, he let Liger take a breather when he thought he was injured, offered to help him to his feet, and then spinebuster, 1, 2, 3. So in that sense, it's fitting. King is continuing this soft heel turn, which I like. And we talked about this last week. At some point, he's going to snap. It's just a question of when and how and why.
Yeah, I mean, and this was actually, I feel like, a little bit more of a further, like, I keep talking about, like, levels of heel moves, and, like, I would say this one is probably a level 2. You know, a genuine, like, fake out like that, making good and then turning the tables, that's probably a level 2 heel move.
All right, so he's in, like, the second grade now. He started in kindergarten with the feet on the ropes.
Yeah.
Then, like, first grade was a handful of tights. Second grade, a little bit of deception. And by the time he hits his tweens, ROH is in trouble.
Oh my gosh. I mean, those tween heels, they're just going to whack you in the face with a chair and choke you with a wire and stomp on your face.
And then lots of cyberbullying on top of that.
Oh my God. Enough. When Kenny goes into cyber healing, oh.
So our second match on the pay-per-view was the tag titles, the Briscoes versus the Addiction, or SoCal Uncensored, whatever you want to call them. Longer match, almost 18 minutes. Story here was Kaz got injured, busted open in the back of his head, seemed legit, right? Like, I don't think I've ever heard of wrestlers blading the back of their head.
Yeah, he took that bump.
So, and I didn't go back and watch, and I haven't really read from anywhere where anybody speculated on what caused the injury or what caused him to be busted open. And so I wonder, I mean, what did you think? Do you think that changed the course of the match, or was this the plan all along? The story of the match was going to be Kaz gets injured at ringside, Daniels fights valiantly, and falls to the numbers.
I'm gonna go with it was planned. I don't know that it was supposed to be quite as nasty looking as it was. That type of thing can quickly escalate, so it doesn't surprise me. But I think it was planned.
Yeah, I thought like maybe the original plan was, oh, he would like go down at ringside and hurt his knee and he couldn't compete or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why they had to, whatever. But if he was legitimately like hurt to the extent that they acted with medics and everybody in Scorpio rushing out, I'd have to imagine they would have taken him to the back immediately. They wouldn't have had him stay at ringside for the rest of the match.
No, he was at ringside. So he was okay. It was, I mean, definitely worked, but, and definitely planned. But I think surprising nonetheless, and it does show the deftness of these two tag teams that they were able to like kind of roll with that and make that work with the original plan.
Yeah, and not a bad story because it gives the Briscoes a clean win. Doesn't hurt SCU all that much. Daniels put up a hell of a fight before he went down to the numbers.
He took a ton of punishment from them. Took a ton, kept kicking out, kept escaping from it.
Did he take too much though? Because that was my okay. So he takes a J driller on the floor, and kicks out.
Yeah,
after wrestling a 2-on-1 match for a good 5 minutes there at that point.
Yeah, and it always, you know, there are moves that are more protected than the Jade Roller, but it's pretty protected. So that did surprise me that they were gonna get him out of that and so like far into the match after all of that. It didn't bother me when I was watching it. It did bother me in kind of retrospect.
Yeah, I still remember it was after his world title run, I think. But I remember the first time somebody kicked out of a Jade Roller during a match, and the commentators lost it. They were like, oh my God, nobody's ever kicked out of that. And that was in the ring. Now he's hitting one on the floor, and Daniels is kicking out. And that's unnecessary. He could have hit one in the ring and got pinned, and you would have been like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he eventually does eat the pin from another Jade Roller, but yeah, just not that particular one.
Yeah, but I guess the idea is, you know, SCU still looked very strong in defeat. We have to assume they'll go back to this match sooner than later, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I think so far our record as far as what we have predicted, our prediction record is right on.
Yeah, we got the winners correct for the first two matches.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't know how soon they'll go back to this match. Not a Glory by Honor, which we'll get to later on in the show. But I'm wondering, will they continue the Kaz injury? And maybe next time it'll be Daniels and Scorpio teaming up to challenge for the titles, because Kaz will still be kayfabe injured.
And that would be interesting because, you know, Kaz and Scorpio defeated the Briscoes at All In. Daniels and Kaz were not able to defeat them here. So
we go with combo number three.
Yeah, that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. Our third match, the Women of Honor World Championship. Sumi Sakai versus Tennille Dashwood. I mean, not a surprise to me that I quite enjoy this one.
I'm going to say it. I'm sure people will quibble with me. And they will probably quibble that the main event was better. For me, this was the match of the night.
Yeah, it was. I loved lots of energy right from the beginning. We've seen that a lot with Women of Honor lately, I feel like. I don't know if it's them feeling that they still need to prove themselves in ROH or step up, you know, really compete with the guys and show that they have what it takes to be taken as credibly, or if it's the fact that they're just generally speaking not given as much time as the men, and so they feel like they need to be a lot faster or like just get to the good stuff right away.
Yeah. I think it's probably a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think that, you know, there has been some dedication to giving Women of Honor space to grow and a little bit, you know, of time to evolve. They are now starting to like sign more Women of Honor into the roster. So like, that's great. And that is showing in the confidence that they have in the performers that they're already enlisting. And I just want to say, like, I don't think I've seen Sumi look this good since her win at Supercard, maybe even better than.
Yeah. And we don't see a lot of her MMA stuff come in. Like, she legitimately has an MMA background, competed multiple matches, things like that. And that's not something that comes up every match, or not even something that's brought up every match, like with Josh Woods and his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or something like that. So I liked that. I felt like, oh, this is a different story that we've told. It was a different match than when we saw her face Karen Q or Jenny Rose.
Yeah, absolutely. There was, you know, cliche to say, but there was fire there that kind of surprised me. And what surprised me even more as someone who was watching from home, I kind of, all the concerns I had about this match not having enough buildup and not momentum and not enough story to like really make it feel momentous kind of blew right away because of how just really aggressively these women came into this match, both Sumi and Tennille. And I've been on the record saying that I haven't been like totally impressed with Tennille's run in Ring of Honor so far. So to see like this really great spark from Tennille, to see a kind of a multitude of shades from her wrestling in this match against Sumi, I was really, really impressed. I think it's the first time I've watched a Tennille match and like really walked away thinking, hey, I that's what I want to see. That's the Women of Honor. Like that's the level of the roster I want to see.
Well, unfortunately for you, it's going to be a while.
I know.
So you have that reaction again. Tennille was attacked later on in the show by someone, we don't know who, an unnamed attacker, an unseen attacker. And word has since come out that she legitimately has been battling a shoulder issue for months now. in addition to her physical health issues, which we talked about before, I think, did I say it was eczema or it was...
It's an autoimmune disease of some type. I don't know if it's eczema or something else, but...
So a couple of different health issues, and as a result, she is going to be taking time off for a while. Not sure how long, but you got at least a couple of months.
That, I mean, I rest up and heal up and, you know, take care of yourself and then come back, because this is, come back to this level, because this was fairly incredible. And honestly, her competing with an existing shoulder injury, it does make this match a little uncomfortable to watch at points, because there are some submissions in this that are just really insane if you think about the fact that Tennille is nursing like a legitimate shoulder injury. The final submission is just absolutely brutal. And to see that come from Sumi was just like something else.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Well, my only, not even necessarily a complaint, but my only pondering coming out of this was, okay, so who's next for Sumi now?
Yeah.
It's not like there's no obvious next number one challenger. Nobody's being really built up strong in the background. There's a little bit of, we saw the first chapter of a feud between Jenny Rose and Kelly Klein, or arguably the second, depending on how you want to skew it. But that was weeks ago. That was like a month and a half ago. We haven't seen anything from them since. And who else is there? Madison Rain signed, but Sumi just beat her clean a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And I mean, who else do we have on the fringes? I mean, we're going to get probably some more, like, you know, of your proving ground matches and your random challenge matches from women we haven't seen for a little while.
When she went to the UK, she defended against Chardonnay.
Right.
They're going to be coming back up to my neck of the woods soon, Toronto and stuff, so maybe they'll find like a Canadian woman to compete. But whenever they do those, like the local challenger, you never buy into them winning, right?
No, not unless it's, you know, it's a worked situation where like the local is actually someone, you know, with major buzz. No.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, that's my problem right now, is I don't know what they do with Sumi next, because she hasn't really had feuds either.
No, she really hasn't.
She had a little bit of a rivalry with Jenny Rose, but that was it.
Yeah, and like even that like was pretty quickly dissolved by the end of the match. Like they had...
Yeah, they had one match, and that was the extent of the feud.
And now they're building a feud with Jenny and Kelly whenever Kelly gets back from Stardom. So is Kelly... I can't remember. Is Kelly still like... Does she still get a rematch?
Rematch for what?
I mean, can she come back and challenge for the title?
She could challenge for the title in the sense that she, you know, she has a lot of wins and people with far lesser resumes than her have got title shots, right?
Right. So,
but
like,
she's not like owed one because she lost in the tournament finals or anything.
Well, exactly, but. I mean, she can come back and challenge and have, you know, more legitimacy for that challenge than, say, like, you know, any other challenger having lost the major match to Sumi. So maybe that's where we're going. Maybe Kelly comes back from Japan and we see that the return to that feud. Well, yeah, rivalry, I guess.
Yeah, if not her, they have to find a way to quickly give Brandi Rhodes some credibility, or who else is there? I can't think of anybody else. That Sumi hasn't already beaten in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I don't know.
But moving on, fourth match on the pay-per-view. Somebody who has no shortage of challengers is Pancho Martinez, the world television champion. He defeated Chris Sabin at the pay-per-view. Then, of course, Aaron Solo on this week's television. And then he's got another opponent already lined up down the road. So Punishment and Sabin, kind of a decisive victory.
Yeah, very decisive. clearly was meant to set up something else. I was a little disappointed, honestly. It was very decisive and also very short. I think this was an under eight minutes.
8 minutes and 1 second by my timing.
Oh boy, they were really running on the schedule. I really want them not to stop paying attention to Saban as a singles wrestler. They've given him this nice push leading up to this World TV title challenge, and I would like to see him still around. I don't know in what capacity, because I don't think he'll get a world title shot, but it would be great to see them continue to invest like some actual like, you know, time and attention to Saban, especially as Saban kind of reworks his gimmick to be a singles wrestler. And personally, I think, you know, snarky, rugged, metal lesbian is a really great gimmick. So I am all for Chris Sabin, warrior poet Chris Sabin's singles career.
All right. Well, I'll put a pin in the Chris Sabin discussion and give my thoughts when we get to talking about this week's TV.
Okay. But he has he has not just one eye of the tiger, Harley. He has the eye of the tiger, but for both of his eyes.
Yeah, see, it's a little too, like, Chuck Norris facts for me. It's a little too... I said, when I was 12, I would have thought that this was the coolest thing in the world.
Maybe
it's been a while since I was 12.
He's omnipresent?
Sure.
Come on. I think it's great. I think that you have to be careful about these type of intro things. I've seen them done on the indie circuit quite a few. You know, David Starr, an independent wrestler, has like a pretty notable, like, lengthy intro that he has all the announcers read. So you have to pick your moments for that. You don't use it every match. I thought this was a good time for Saban to do something kind of goofy and to kind of work his gimmick into a bit more of a comical point. And honestly, what does he have to lose if he's going to be fighting a match that has the results that are really just intended to like push the story with Punishment and, you know, another challenger?
Yeah, that was the thing. For all the build for Saban going into this, he brings a chair into the ring, Martinez brings a chair into the ring. Saban ends up being the one to use it. He hits a tornado DDT onto the chair, and it makes no difference. Martinez wins 2 minutes later with his finishing move.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow. So, like, what a weird story. The heel tries to cheat, the babyface inadvertently ends up cheating, and the heel still wins.
Yeah. Yeah, and all of this done in 8 minutes and a single second. And then, yeah, you know, we get our
but
post-match.
Then we find out why, and it's just because Punishment needs to look strong, because he's going up against a guy who has literally been booked as a god in other promotions.
Yes. And so that we get a taste of in this moment after this match. Who do we see appear, but yet again, not interrupting a top prospect tournament, but the top prospect, Jeff Cobb.
Yes, so I love that he's getting into something right away. I said this last week. Like, I don't want to see 2 months of him wrestling enhancement matches against Cheeseburger. I want to see him doing something big. Television title, that's pretty big. And we've seen other guys come in and go after the TV title right away. Will Ospreay won the TV title in his first ROH match. And I want to say Marty Scurll won it in his first match from Ospreay 2 days later. Or
yes,
something like that.
I think you're right. It's something like that.
So I like that Cobb's going right into the thick of it right off the bat.
Yeah, Cobb has a reputation that the commentary team is doing a really good job of selling. So he's coming in there looking as strong as he is. He's coming in there looking as desirable of a title holder as he is. So it makes all the sense in the world for him to just get pushed right into a title run, and rather than have any kind of, like, you know, meaningless buildup where he defeats a bunch of guys who should have matches that are more legitimate than jobber status.
But is Cobb a babyface then?
No. They're putting him in the tweener zone right now.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense if he's the kind of guy who just will pick fights with anybody who's in his way. He doesn't care who they are, what kind of people they are, right?
Yeah, he's the big dude. So, like, Punishment comes at him with a chair. He whacks him with a chair, and Jeff Cobb no-sells it. That's the story that you need. Like, that's all the story you need to know. like his character right now. And I'm hoping, you know, they'll develop it in ROH because he's definitely developed it elsewhere, his gimmicks elsewhere. But that's the story for his character right now in ROH. He's bigger and stronger than you. He doesn't fear you. He's going to take your title. He's going to take the top prospect tournament without actually ever competing in it. And he's going to do it without like breaking a sweat nearly at all.
All right. Well, like I said at the start of this episode, I just really hope that they are able to kind of push him more towards the heel territory in the future. Because he was positioned here to get a huge pop, right?
Yes.
And you're cheering for seeing him. You're cheering for Punishment Martinez getting his butt kicked.
Yes.
You're like, I'm just thinking like, oh no, like we don't need another like ultra popular babyface. We got plenty of those.
Yeah, I think that he's poised in the tweener zone right now, but that could very easily go like go into pure heel. What's not really helping that is the commentary team's like unbridled enthusiasm for his presence at Ring of Honor. Everyone is so excited and so joyful. So even when he, you know, breaks up a top prospect tournament match and, you know, throws both competitors around and just like, you know, demands attention, Ian is saying only really nice things about him, despite the fact that like, if it was another guy, the commentary team would probably not be rooting for him.
Yeah, and I guess that's the issue. Maybe it would be easier to turn him heel later than to try to start him out that way. Because the fans are going to cheer for him being there.
Yes.
They're excited just to see him. Which, you know, that's not an issue that Bully Ray or Silas Young or the Briscoes run into. Because they've been around a while. The fans are so excited to see the Briscoes. But nobody's excited to see Bully Ray.
No, definitely not. Hey, speaking of,
my colleague, Pro Wrestling Torch senior ROH correspondent Sean Radican, had some very bad things to say about this match. I think he called it one of the worst booked matches he's ever seen, and something to that effect. I didn't hate it quite that much, but I did think it was a very, very strange one.
It was exceptionally strange. I can't pretend that there probably aren't worse booked matches out there, but I'm gonna go with Radican's opinion on this. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. It was a really long match for what it was. The finish was absolutely awful. The stuff that they were doing with Ian didn't. You know, I understand that you need to put a bunch of people in Bully's way and you need to show him as a threat on multiple levels. They're trying to play him as much of a psychological bully as a physical bully. But at no point did I think that they were going to have Ian like use a chair on Bully Ray, because then you can't weaken Bully Ray's presence that much. You can't weaken it to the point where a guy who is clearly not a wrestler in no form, not like Caprice or not certainly not like Cold, in no form, like take Bully out with a chair. And so building so much tension around these moments just didn't feel right to me.
I mean, you could have the commentator run down and like pull the chair out of Bully's hands when Bully has it above his head or something like that. That's something you'll see like a manager do or a referee or something like that. I don't know. But my thing was, this was a tag match, right?
Yes.
Not a four corner survival.
Yes.
Because how long did Flip and Colt tag with each other? They did like the what's up spot and a couple of flips at like the first minute of the match, and then they had nothing to do with each other for the rest of the night.
Nope. And then, you know, Colt eats a table fairly early on, and then it's Flip versus, you know, the other two guys. And then again, it's another like 2-on-1 match.
Yeah. Cabana was eliminated just around the 7-minute mark. And that was, I don't even have an issue if you want to put the heels over here and save Bully Ray's comeuppance for like final battle or later on down the line. I don't have an issue with that per se. But Colt was eliminated. It felt early. It felt like he didn't get to do a hell of a lot. He hit a couple of things in the ring at the start. And then there's a long stretch with Ian and that at ringside. And then Cabana's elimination with the match just felt so deflating. Yeah. He tries for a powerbomb. Bully counters. Bully hits a powerbomb. The end. And it was like, oh, Bully didn't even like cheat to eliminate him there or take advantage of like Ian taking a poke to the eye, or, you know, like Bully just eliminated Colt fair and square.
Yeah. Yeah. It made me kind of mad because we don't get to see a ton of Colt Cabana wrestling, and I was excited to see him in a match in a pay-per-view, give him some decent time.
Yeah. And it felt like he did so little.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like this match was especially bad for Colt.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Well, and then, so then it's Flip versus Silas and Bully in a handicap match at this point. And again, to an extent, I understand it, because as much as we might love Colt Cabana, it's 2018. ROH isn't building the future around Colt or around Bully Ray. It's about elevating Flip, maybe a little bit about elevating Silas and getting him over even more so as a heel. So to an extent, I understand why Colt and Bully were the first to eliminate from the match. And I don't even mind how Bully was eliminated. That was a good elimination, right? He charges at Flip. Flip ducks out of the way. Bully eliminates himself.
That's fitting.
That fits. Flip is able to overcome the odds due to his flipping.
Yep.
So all that is good. Okay. Then we get the ref bump.
Yep.
Silas is going for misery. Todd Sinclair takes the boots to the head. He's dead. Now, did we have a ref bump in the previous match? We did, yeah. Ref was down. That's when Martinez brought a chair in the ring.
Yes.
So this was part of Vatican's complaint, in on the other hand, was two matches in a row with the ref going down? Come on.
Yeah, and kind of the same thing happens each time, in that like it signals that the heel is going to take the match. And so even though it wasn't necessarily like Silas didn't have the advantage there and still, you know, technically got the table, you know, seeing the ref go down like that and still be down when Silas wins in that table tells you everything you need to know. You don't even need to see the finish.
Yes, and then the finish definitely, like, if you're on the fence, like, oh, this is, I don't love this, but it's okay. The finish was like, oh, no, this isn't good.
I threw a tantrum. I hate when this type of thing is done poorly, and this was done poorly. Sorry. We're very positive. We try to say really positive things, but this to me was a swing and a miss.
This is the kind of thing Eddie Guerrero tried to pull this all the time in WWE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the ref was down. When the ref gets up, Eddie's line out cold. Other guy's got a chair, and Eddie tries to get the other guy disqualified. But the ref never fell for it. The ref was like, I didn't see it, so I can't call this. I can't be like, just take your word for it that this is what happened. And so for Todd Sinclair, senior
ROH official. Yes, like, not some kid, not even Paul Turner. It's Todd Sinclair.
Yeah, maybe if they had done this, if that had been the story, is they had, like, a new ref who was just, like, being given a tryout or something for this match, or a special guest referee or something, right? Somebody who's a bit more novice, you could cover it a bit. But for Sinclair to just wake up, see Flip lying on a broken table and go, well, I guess he went through the table. Silas Young wins.
Yeah, that really kind of cheapened the whole narrative around Todd Sinclair being, like, senior, you know, official at ROH. Like, but why, if that's the type of officiating that, like, he's capable of doing, it hurts Todd Sinclair's credibility as an official. And that's, people could quibble that doesn't really, you know, it's not that important, but it is important. If you're going to have matches that have finishes like that, you need to have a credible reason why a ref would fall for it.
And that was my thing. That's what I felt coming out of it, is if they had done this finish maybe a different way or figured out a different whatever, then we'd be mad at Bully for the fact that he managed to actually pull this off. Everything, all signs were that he should never have gotten away with this finish. It's so convoluted. It's so ridiculous that any referee would fall for this. So if Bully found a way to make it logical that the referee fell for this, we'd be so mad at Bully and Silas right now.
Yes. And that.
But instead, I just came away feeling mad at Sinclair for being like, really? You're going to make this decision in favor of a guy who whipped you with a chain at the last pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I don't buy it. And I think you hit on the absolute right point. Like, we're supposed to walk away from this mad at Bully, mad at Silas, especially mad at Bully. And instead, it's just, I'm more just like kind of confounded and angry about the whole finish in of itself. And it makes me question like the booking of it again. And, you know, any moment in a match, especially in a finish, that makes you step back and be like, that really wasn't a wise booking decision, kind of tears you out of the experience of watching the wrestling match and like the kayfabe and like immersing yourself in that experience. And that's not good. That's, you know, the movie equivalent of us, like, you know, seeing the strings on the paper flying saucer. You know, that feels cheap, and it makes the audience not really want to, you know, watch any of those matches again, watch those particular matches.
All right, Emily, throwing shade at Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I mean, you can see those strings. Very controversial opinion.
Yes. Well, we'll get back to Bully and Silas in a little bit.
Unfortunately.
Match number 6 at the pay-per-view was the big 10-man tag. Bullet Club versus Chaos. Nick Aldis on commentary. What do you make of Nick Aldis spending a lot of time in ROH lately?
I think that it makes a lot of sense given how much ROH and the NWA seem to be working together. Now that Cody has the belt, it makes sense, but also I appreciate it. I appreciate it because I appreciate any promotions working openly with one another. And it wasn't just All In and the guys like making this arrangement with the NWA. Now it's clear that like ROH is behind it as well, which is good. I think that it helps the NWA certainly, but it also helps legitimize the belt further and Cody being the one holding it. And also I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I thought Aldis was great on commentary. I thought he was like hit all the right notes. He was very funny. He was very like kind of condescending at points and picking on Ian a little bit about things that Ian had said about him. I really enjoyed his work here.
Well, I agree with most of what you said. My main issue is we know the NWA title is going to be defended on ROH television in the near future. Cody versus Willie Mack, that's been announced. But the thing is, it's only a one-hour weekly show, and we've already got 5 titles in this promotion. We've got the world title, the TV title, the tag titles, the six-man titles, the Women of Honor title. We had the NWA title to that. We've now got 6 different belts competing for space on TV, competing for airtime. I mean, NXT is a weekly, one-hour weekly show, just like ROH. They have 3 titles. And that feels like a good number. That feels like there's not too many. We don't get an abundance of title matches, and we don't get people like really fighting for space. If we got the NWA title being defended on a regular basis, being featured on a regular basis, I want to say Nick Aldis wrestles a non-title match building to this NWA title shot on ROH TV in a couple weeks too. So it's like now we've got NWA guys wrestling weekly TV matches. How are we ever going to find space for Karen Q, Josh Woods, the Bouncers, people like this?
I mean, I do agree with you there. I mean, there's a priority of space that seems to be a little skewed right now. And I think part of that is that, like, they really want, this might just be them, ROH kind of politicking to fit within whatever it is Cody wants to be doing. Cody has a lot of control right now over his own storyline. So if Cody wants to keep the NWA belt in, like, you know, in the spotlight, they're gonna probably let him do that, and that means working with NWA to make sure that like Aldis has a presence, so that when these matches happen, you know, if there's a title defense, or you know, if Aldis and Cody ever have a match on ROH, like that there's some like established ground there for ROH specifically. That's kind of my read on it. But you're right, like there is there's a little bit of austerity of space right now. And we give over quite a bit already to Bullet Club, and adding the NWA as kind of extension of one of the big members of Bullet Club's story does eat up more space that can be used to develop more of the talent that's already in Ring of Honor.
Well, the NWA title will be a story that we'll be discussing for months to come on this podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly don't mind the idea of there being another title that's around, primarily because I don't see any other guys, challenging. Like, I don't see the ROH guys challenging Cody for the NWA belt. I think, there's going to be a rematch. They're going to do a 2 out of 3 falls match between Cody and Aldis. And from there, who knows what the story is going to do. So this might, we might see the end of the story sooner than we see its detracting factors.
I still like the idea of Kenny King and Cody as a payoff to King's Bullet Club story. But I just like it as an idea. Whether or not it's actually going to happen, I would not put good money on that at all.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. But I never say never. Yeah. And it does make a lot of sense in a certain way.
Well, so something that didn't make a lot of sense to me was this 10-man tag.
Yeah. Oh.
If only because it seemed like there wasn't a feud going in the match per se. There wasn't really a lot of build between it. So I thought either it's got to be about the Cody and the Bucks being the 6-man champions, like the Kingdom get involved and distract them to get payback, or Chaos pick up the win in order to set up a feud for the 6-man titles. Neither of those happened. Instead, the story of the match seemed to be the miscommunications between Bullet Club.
Yeah, and I didn't...
There was at least 2 occasions when Paige took like a super kick or took somebody else's offense from one of his teammates. There's one occasion where he hit a buckshot lariat on one of his teammates by mistake. Marty got super kicked near the end of the match by Matt by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So that seemed to be the big story of the match, was like Bullet Club is just off their game. They just keep attacking each other, injuring each other by mistake.
Which is weird. Are we supposed to have seen this recently?
This is the first time we've seen the guy since All In.
Well, that's true. And I mean, if you think about it, they kind of like totally set this up with that promo that they showed on last week's TV, setting up this match where the guys are just kind of shouting over each other. So, that might have been more meaningful than just a cheap joke.
But then, so this was like the main story of the match, mm-hmm. as far as I could tell. And then it had nothing to do with the finish.
No. Yeah.
You'd think after all that, it's like, oh, they're telling the story that Bullet Club aren't on the same page. They keep whatever. And that's how Chaos is going to pick up the win here. And instead, Marty just makes Rocky Romero tap out to the chicken wing.
Yeah. And this is funny because I feel 2 ways about this whole finish. I think that the way he got him into the chicken wing is really cool. I do think Rocky not being able to take like 2 seconds of being in the chicken wing is kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, he tapped out in, like, half a second.
Yeah, I mean,
I had that in my report.
Yeah, it's in it, and he taps out, basically. And, come on, guys, be a little nicer to Rocky Romero here.
Yeah, so that was all weird to me. I mean, maybe this is just the start of something, right? Maybe the Bullet Club miscues. This is chapter 1 of that, and we're going to see more over the next couple of months. And it's going to be, I don't know, a tease to their... They have big egos now that All In was such a success.
Yeah.
Or they're just everybody's so absorbed in their own thing that their teamwork is suffering. I don't know. Maybe it'll become more clear as we go forward.
Yeah.
But within this match, it didn't seem to have anything. It didn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, it just didn't add up to anything. It makes sense for them to be in a little bit of a form of a disarray, only based on like kind of what you said, them kind of having different things that they're focusing on right now. Overall, I wasn't totally crazy about this match, which bums me out to say it, because you have people like Ishii and Okada involved, and it should be one of those things where it's like a treat to watch regardless. But I actually found like the overall match kind of disjointed. There wasn't a good like flow to any of like the ins and outs of the rings and the action that was happening on the side of the ring. There were a lot of like spots off the top rope onto a group of guys where it definitely felt like, okay, these guys are just standing there waiting to catch someone. It was surprisingly not as like polished and as polishedly crazy as I have come to expect by, you know, both of these groups.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Well, our last match, our main event of the pay-per-view, was Jay Lethal versus the aerial assassin, Will Ospreay. That's right, he hates the Little Mermaid. Apparently, that's his whole nickname.
Yes.
What can I say?
Not a fan.
No. This was one where I wasn't expecting to... I know these guys are both amazing athletes, but again, lack of story. I wasn't expecting to be all that invested in it because I knew there's no way Ospreay was winning. I knew that there was no real whatever backstory to this match or feud or heat, whatever you want to call it. But it was a great match, straight up. I became invested. I loved the action itself, and you know, I couldn't help but come away thinking, ooh, how much better could this have been if I thought there was a chance Ospreay would win, if they had been telling this really interesting story over the past like 5-6 weeks building up to this.
With you there. This match would have twice the impact if there was any, you know, any sense that Ospreay could walk away the champion. And that's one of the things that deflated it for me just a little bit. It's kind of like I said earlier that the Women of Honor match was the match of the night for me. And there's two reasons for that as far as judging it against the Lethal Ospreay match. One, I do think the Lethal Ospreay match suffered a little bit from a bit too many shenanigans happening. It didn't really need it. I felt like the bumps that Bobby Cruz took and just kind of a lot of the stuff that was happening on outside of the ring wasn't super necessary or could have been condensed. I get why they do it. It just didn't actually work for the match to me, which is quibbles, really. It's quibbles. The other deflating factor being that, you know, there wasn't even a point in the match where like I was sold on the idea that Ospreay was gonna take the title. And there was one more moment, and anyone else who has heard me complain about this probably knows what it is. I just go on the record yet again saying I don't like the appearance of ladders in non-ladder matches.
Yeah, and
I mean, even used like this, it's a little bit better. It's not quite as like obnoxious as like the Kenny Cody match from the G1 special, where they like was actually built and put in the ring and for no good reason. But I don't like tables in I don't like ladders in non-ladder matches. I think it always looks kind of clumsy. The commentary team always has to do like kind of silly. Silly commentary about, you know, why there's a ladder. Like, I just thought it was really funny the multiple times that Ian would mention that, like, oh, the ladder's there because it builds our infrastructure and these guys are clearly not lighting technicians, which is goofy and made me laugh, but it, you know, kind of isn't the point of this match. I felt like that kind of total disruption of the match, like, you know, took me out of it a little bit.
I want a copy of the Pro Wrestler Referee's Handbook. Because I'm very, you know, steel chair, disqualification. Ring steps, not necessarily a disqualification, right?
Yeah.
Picking up like a wrench, hitting your opponent with it, disqualification. Powerbombing someone onto a ladder, not a disqualification.
No.
What? So how does that constitute? If Ospreay had picked up the ladder and hit Lethal with it, definitely would have been a DQ, right?
You would assume, right? I mean, there were several...
But powerbombing him onto it, not a DQ. Why is that?
Because
the ladder just happened to be there. It was like, it was almost happenstance. Like, he didn't plan it. It was just an accident that Lethal fell on the ladder.
I mean, I guess you could make an argument of like, you misaimed or whatever. Like, that's not an obvious DQ in the way that like hitting someone deliberately with a ladder is. And I was glad that there wasn't that type of ladder spot. I was. Not for this particular type of match.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, I guess to answer my question, if you have plausible deniability, the referee won't disqualify you.
You know, it just depends on how the ref is feeling, you know? He might be extra harsh, and the minute anything comes out that's not legal, he kicks you out of there. There were multiple times where Ospreay had the belt in his hand and was clearly going to use it as a weapon, and it wasn't even taken away from him, let alone him being disqualified.
Hey, that would be a fun idea, though, is have a referee in promotion whose character is that he is just totally no-nonsense. Like, any slightest thing. You don't break a hole in the ropes in, like, 3 seconds, he'll disqualify you, and everybody knows that. So when you're booked in his matches, everybody just has to be on the top of their, like, tiptoes game to make sure they don't do anything to offend this guy.
I mean, is that kind of contrary to the whole spirit of pro wrestling, though? That, like, it's not, doesn't really matter? The rule...
I don't know, I like the idea of just having, like, I'm sure in baseball there's, like, one umpire who's known. There is.
I'm sure.
One umpire who's like, oh, yeah, he rarely calls balls. Like, everything's a strike or whatever, you know, something like that. So you could do the same idea.
Sure. I mean, I would take that gimmick over just, like, the recurring thing where, like, refs seem to be just overly permissive.
Yes, or the notion of the fragile ref where, you know, you take, like, you get bumped in the head and you're dead for 3 minutes.
Oh my God. Oh, I don't want to backtrack to Todd Sinclair's bump, but like his bump wasn't that bad and he was like out cold. Come on, Todd.
Well, so Jay Lethal wins with the lethal injection. That pretty much as we predicted.
Yep.
And then after the match, some stuff happens to kind of get us back on track to like some actual ROH feuds as opposed to Lethal versus special guest stars, to put it that way.
Yes.
The Kingdom appear. You get the red balloons floating up in the camera shot. Marcellia and Orion attack. I want to say they attacked both men, didn't they?
Yeah.
Not just Lethal, but Ospreay as well.
Yeah, they kind of, like, they attack Ospreay and kind of just, like, kick him out of the ring, and then they target...
Just to get him out of the way.
Yeah.
And then Jonathan Gresham makes a save. He was on the show after all. He wasn't totally forgotten.
Jonathan Gresham.
He falls, and then Matt Taven returns, and a couple of big reveals here. We get to see the real ROH world title.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the ROH title with a purple belt.
Yes, it was not, as we thought, maybe a crown.
No, yeah, I had thrown that idea out because he's the king, but no, because this is the real title.
Yeah.
Jay Lethal's carrying around this fake one that he, like, bought us in the thrift store.
Yeah, no,
No, he bought it from ROHWrestling.com for $499.
With a special purple belt.
Yeah, those are legit. You can buy an actual ROH replica title belt from their website now. I saw it this morning.
I have seen those, and I saw people at All In wearing various replica belts.
Man, I can't imagine having $500 to spend on a...
No, are you kidding me?
On jewelry.
Are you kidding me on something like that? Like, I get it, and, you know, everyone's got their toys and their vices, but you got to think real hard about your life before you spend $500 on a mock title belt.
Hey, if me and my future wife agree to get ROH title belts, world title, and Women of Honor world title instead of wedding rings, you think ROH would, like, let us get married in their ring or something?
That's so freaking cute, and I think that they probably would. Combined with the fact that, like, you have dedicated, like, hours upon, like, hours of your life covering ROH, writing about ROH, podcasting about ROH, spreading the brand, and then you guys are going to spend $1,000 getting his and hers ROH mock, you know, imitation title belts. It's the least they could do.
All right. But I'm only going to do it if immediately after we say I do, Jeff Cobb and Kelly Klein come down and beat the hell out of us.
Oh, my gosh. You could get a tour of the islands.
Yes. That's my honeymoon. Yes. It's a tour of the island.
A finisher that is both, like, very efficient and also, like, weirdly romantic. So it totally works for a wedding ceremony.
Sure.
Yes.
Before we wrap up our pay-per-view discussion, Matt Taven's new haircut.
Matt Shaven.
Oh. Is that trending?
No.
In the U.S.?
I just thought of it. It probably has been said by other people whose comments I did not read, but he will... for the foreseeable future be known on this podcast as Matt Shaven.
I like it, though. He's got, it's like a faint mohawk, very, very short, but shaved. I thought it looked good.
I kind of dug the look, the, you know, little tiny like mohawk nub, like nub hawk. And
that's got to be one of the funniest things in pro wrestling, in the world of pro wrestling, though, is anytime a guy lose a hair versus hair match, and it's so embarrassing that you've lost and you've had your head shaved, but then you come back and you look like cool and badass and you just keep it.
Yeah. He also,
like, that's what happened with Kurt Angle.
Yeah. Look at Suzuki. Minoru Suzuki lost a hair match and he has gone with it and looks amazing and more menacing than ever and totally works for him. It's kind of the weird key about a hair versus hair match is you just got to make sure that guy can actually rock a bald head. I think this is a good look for Taven. I like also the fact that he wasn't like hyper spray tanned. He like the one guy who comes back from Mexico who's not like super golden.
And it puts an end to my Pauly Shore comparison.
Yes.
He does not look like Pauly Shore anymore.
He doesn't look like Pauly Shore. He'll still probably kind of sound like Pauly Shore, but he does not look like him. And so now, forevermore, he is Matt Shaven.
Rest in peace to the weasel, Matt Taven.
Yeah. It's a good run.
All right. So that was Death Before Dishonor. And then we had weekly television. But before we get into our TV, we have listener mail.
Yay!
As a rebuttal to last week's show. Last week on the show, we were asking whether or not any wrestling promotion had ever done like a show where the ring is surrounded by a swimming pool or something to that effect. Now, you have an answer for that. Yes. Okay. First, we'll go into our listener mail. Number one, Philip Bagley writes in and says, unfortunately, he hasn't seen any matches in a pool. However, the Jericho Cruise is rapidly approaching. What a perfect time to have a pool come into play. He proposes Kenny King versus Hangman Page in a pool match where the loser has to skinny dip in front of everyone on the cruise.
I know a few people who are going on the Jericho Cruise who are totally right there with you, Philip. And
yes, our elite repeat co-host, Tempest, is going to be on the Jericho Cruise. I don't know how... I think we asked her before how she would feel about, you know, maybe seeing a Hangman Page skinny dipping. And I think she preferred Marty Scurll.
Oh, I have to disagree with Tempest there.
I'm sure there are lots of people of all genders who would be up for seeing the Hangman or the Bachelor in Paradise.
You know what? Why not get them both in there? Make it a three-way battle, and both those dudes got a skinny dip. You got something for everyone.
Sure. But as far as actual pool matches go, somebody reached out to us on Twitter.
Yes, I should have probably figured this would be the case. A Twitter follower of ours, friend of our show, at Akira Michinoku, linked to a couple of videos, linked us on a couple of videos on Twitter from Atsushi Onaida, who is a Japanese wrestler who did a lot of work with a Japanese promotion called FMW. And Onaida was really like kind of a big innovator when it came to the deathmatch style. So they're booked at least one electric pool match, which looks to be an entire card that takes place in a ring that is surrounded by a pool. And something that was really neat to see these videos is that I hadn't really thought about how the wrestlers would get out to the ring. I think, Carly, you said you imagined some kind of like drawbridge.
Yeah, that was my envisioning or an extendable ring.
Yes.
That opens, they walk across, and then it closes.
Yes, or just, you know, like one of those like just like temporary ramps that like, you know, leads into the ring, and it's, you know, it doesn't, you know, take up a ton of space, so there's still a lot of pool.
Oh, they could do like a rope swing, like Kids at the Lake, where you just swing across Tarzan style.
Oh my God, I love that. I'm kind of surprised that this card doesn't include that. But what I think is really cool about this like pool card is that the wrestlers come out there in like motorized inflatable boats. So they really committed. Like they're in the middle of a massive amount of water.
Like the old WrestleMania when they rode their little ring cars down.
Exactly. So there are two videos that he shared with us. I will reshare the links for our listeners to see. So you can follow me at ForkedPGH to see those. I'll post them sometime after our podcast episode goes live.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right. So, this week, TV main event, six-man titles on the line. Cody and the Young Bucks defending for the first time against Silas Young and the Bouncers. First, we got a little backstage thing with Bully Ray and Silas. Bully's bragging about winning at Death Before Dishonor and kind of gives Silas some more BS about, you went from teaming with a Hall of Famer like me to two schmucks. And apparently his words got to Silas.
Yeah, his bit of psychological torture was effective in the end, and it seemed to have gotten into Silas's head enough for him to eventually, you know, just wash his hands of his teammates.
Yeah, so Silas walks out on the match when it looks like he's going to be the victim of a super kick party. He just takes off, leaves Malonis and Bruiser to take the loss for their team. I mean, is this... I'm going to jump to conclusions and say this might be the end of their pairing.
For the foreseeable future, yes. It wouldn't make sense for them to get paired together in the next several months based on this kind of betrayal.
And I like that. I think the Bouncers are well established enough at this point that I'm more interested to see how they operate on their own, away from Silas, where they're not really his henchmen so much as just a big man tag team. Maybe it'll be a chance to get them some mic time or to get to figure out their personalities a bit more.
Yeah, I'm with you. As long as they've been like kind of, you know, in the shadow of Silas, we haven't gotten to really know them as full characters, as you say, just kind of like the big guys. And so I would really like to be more invested in seeing them whenever they do have matches. And right now I'm just not.
And yeah, the Silas Bully. So clearly that's not going away anytime soon. That's continuing. kind of Bully being the devil on his shoulder, I guess. Or is the, I mean, I'm kind of referring to the story in my head now as the story of Silas becoming the new Bully Ray.
Ah.
That almost seems to be where it's going, right? Bully's trying to be like, no, you need to be more like me. That's what he's saying straight up.
Yeah.
You need to not care about other people. Forget your friendships. I dumped Devon. You need to dump these two guys. You need to get meaner. You need to not care about so much stuff. And I like it. We said for, like, in the early part of the summer when we were really down on the Bully Ray story, I said a bunch of times, like, why isn't he partnered up with Shane Taylor or something? Why isn't he, like, helping to elevate somebody else in the process instead of just getting himself over at his age? Now I think this is a perfect middle ground.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating the idea of putting Bully in like a mentor role, or the unofficial manager type role for Silas here, because that's kind of what's happening. And I think it works for Bully. I think it works on two levels. One, we don't have to see, and just no dismissal to the work that he's done in the ring in the past or even in the last several months. But like, there's a limitation to what Bully Ray can do in ring as a wrestler. So they were gonna need to put him in a position where he could have the screen time. They could push this story, but he doesn't have to wrestle, because, you know, eventually these like squash matches, these, you know, just like DQs, even in like the tables match at Death Before Dishonor, just wasn't gonna do it and keep the crowds invested and want us to follow in the story. So putting Silas in the middle here and having Silas kind of like, you know, Bully Ray's like puppet is smart. And works for Silas too.
Yeah, maybe it'll be the key to finally getting Silas kind of to the next level, to into the main event scene. Well, I mean, Glory by Honor, 10 days from now, main event has been announced: Jay Lethal versus Silas Young for the world title.
Yeah, so something is, you know, something in Bully Ray's tutelage is working, right?
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see if Bully's in his corner for that match. Or maybe Bully and Gresham have a match earlier in the night.
Ooh. Yeah.
a real match, not a 3-second low blow disqualification.
Yeah. It would be nice to see. I want to see Bully Ray actually lose. Like, I want to see him like lose a match. So far,
final battle. Yeah. Against, I don't know, against Colt. At this point, it feels like ROH doesn't care about actually putting over Colt Cabana as a wrestler, right? They never let him wrestle. They wrestles once every 6 months, and in this case, it's like 5 minutes. So it feels like they're not invested in that, showcasing him as a top act.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, you made a good point earlier of like, it is 2018 and they do need to, you know, be focusing on their up and coming guys, you know, and their like top stars. But, you know, Colt is, you know, beloved on the indie circuit and beloved as an ROH commentator and sometimes wrestler. Like, you got to do Colt a little bit better than that.
And he's not old and washed up. He's not like a year away from retirement or anything like that, right? You saw the Acai moonsault that he did at Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it the other day. I feel like ROH should be treating Cabana, maybe, the way WWE treats Triple H. He doesn't wrestle often. He doesn't wrestle on weekly TV. He's not in like long drawn-out feuds. But he wrestles 2 or 3 times a year on big platforms. WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, stuff like that. And his matches are always treated as a big deal because it's like, this is one of the guys. You know, 10 years ago, he was a big name in this company. 15 years ago, he was a huge name in this company. And he's still as good as he ever was. Still a huge draw. Still really popular with the fans. And WWE does that with Triple H. They use it. They put him in these big marquee matches and they really build up a lot of hype around it and give him proper stories. And I feel like they could do that with Colt. Have him be a weekly commentator still, but every 5-4 months, something happens that kind of starts to build towards a big marquee match.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that that's what they were doing with this match at Death Before Dishonor. They were giving Colt a big place to shine, and they didn't. You know, they took him out of the match fairly quickly in a way that wasn't, you know, very befitting of that as a story for Colt. So. Yeah,
And the match was announced so late that there wasn't a lot of time to build it. Colt didn't get to do any promos promoting the match.
No, and they could have very easily built this just a bit more because of that incident at All In. It gets referenced by Ray in his promo before the match at Death Before Dishonor, and it is a good segue into this match that ended up happening at this pay-per-view. So. They could have announced it just a little bit earlier with a little bit more build and it would have been effective. Instead, the last couple of weeks of ROH TV, we had Lethal and Gresham against Bully Ray and Silas Young. So it just felt like a weird step back, even though it shouldn't have been.
Well, whether or not, probably haven't seen the last of Colt wrestling in ROH. I'm sure he'll wrestle at least one more time in ROH in my lifetime. But have we seen the last of Bernard the Business Bear?
Huh. Okay.
He appeared on this week's TV.
He did.
That's true.
He did.
However, this was taped a long time ago, as judging by Cody's blonde hair.
Yeah.
That's my point of reference. I don't know exactly when this week's TV was taped, but Cody was blonde. So a while ago.
Cody's been kind of bouncing, though, so it's hard to say, because he went brown in July. I think he went back to blonde for All In. And now...
Was he blonde
at
all? Yeah. I don't remember
that. I'm pretty sure, right? Yes. Oh, yes, because he...
Yes, because
he was bleeding. And like... every blonde knows that the blood is extra effective if you have that light-colored hair. So...
But he was brunette at Death Before Dishonor.
Yes, and now...
So that was throwing me off.
And he's in this kind of weird in between. Yeah, he's kind of brown, kind of blonde. It's like a real, like, almost like a dirty blonde. I don't remember when the Philadelphia tapings were, but it could have been anywhere between July and September 1st or September.
Well, regardless, whenever this was taped, it was a while ago. But I just bring this up because Bernard wasn't at All In, which was very surprising to me at the time, wasn't at Death Before Dishonor, and hasn't tweeted or retweeted anything since the middle of August.
Weird. Do you think there's been like a staffing change with Bernard the Bear?
something happened and Nick finally got Bernard in the picture.
For me, at first I was a little surprised that Bernard didn't accompany Cody out to the ring for the All In match. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. They were framing that match in a very different way than Cody has framed his entrances in the past. That whole title match was kind of put on this pedestal of importance and kind of given a gravitas that would not have worked if you were, you know, accompanied by a very comical looking, you know, business themed bear mascot. So for me, his lack of presence at that match was understandable.
Yeah, and that's my wondering is maybe now that Cody's NWA champion, they feel like he wanted to get a little bit more of a serious approach. So goodbye, Bernard.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't at the Fighting Spirit Unleashed, the New Japan. And I think he's made at least one appearance at a New Japan show.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Maybe there'll be follow up on being the Elite. If Bernard is going away, that's fine. I get it. But I wanted some sort of like closure. I don't want him to just disappear 1 week. I want a story as to why he's gone.
I think we'll see. I think we will be given all the answers. Don't you worry.
They're just like no one being the Elite. Like 6 months from now, somebody will just mention like, hey, whatever happened to that Bernard guy? And Cody will be like, oh, I sent him to live on a farm upstate.
No, I think we'll find out what happened to Bernard. I think we'll the continuation of his story with Nick might take it some interesting places.
All right. Our second title match on this week's TV, Punisher Martinez versus Dojo Pro Black Belt, Aaron Solo. Emily, he wore the big ugly
title. Oh, my God. I hate this belt so much. I hate it so much. I hate it. Oh, I hate those belts. Okay, that's out of my system. Sorry. It's a really bad belt. Why?
So I don't know what Dojo Pro viewership was like. You and I watched it back at the time before we knew that there was unsavory people involved in directing and stuff. But, you know, regardless of whether or not we liked the show or what we thought of the series at the time, this was not a great epilogue to that season.
No.
This was no promotion for this match prior to this week. It was mentioned, you know, last week that this was happening, but Aaron Solo didn't get any mic time. The video package to promote this match was laughable.
Yeah.
It was like a 15-second package with no narration or anything, just clips of Aaron Solo hitting like two or three moves. You know, no mention. I mean, the commentators mentioned that he beat Jeff Cobb to win the whole gauntlet, but no mention of Joey Janela or Shane Strickland, MJF, some of the other big names in the tournament, right? You mentioned that all those guys were in it and Solo won. That really puts over Solo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead, it was like, yeah, just very, it was just like, it was like he was Chardonnay or one of these, you know, Women of Honor challengers who just like, oh yeah, here's Aaron Solo and he's getting a title shot.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose in 7 minutes decisively.
It was
a Punisher Martinez greatest hits.
I think I'm going to end up disagreeing with someone who wrote us some listener mail, but I didn't think Solo looked great in this. He had some sequences where the intent was to make him look strong, but at no point did I feel like he was a credible opponent. Like, at no point did I feel like he was a credible threat.
Yeah, after we came back from commercial break, he got a bit of a flurry of offense and avoided a couple of things, hit a couple of stuff. But in the end, it was just like a psycho driver, silencer, South of Heaven chokeslam, 1-2-3, and then 1-2-3. That was it. So pretty strong, decisive win for Punishment.
Yeah, I mean, Punishment just basically counters everything with like his like very fundamental moveset of just like catching him in a choke slam whenever Solo goes for almost any kind of jump on him. And that's, you know, that's kind of the story of the match. And eventually he gets, you know, a choke slam. He gets choke slammed enough where, you know, Punishment gets the pin. And
then that was it. It was like on to the next segment.
Yeah.
Which I will admit a little surprised me that I thought for sure, oh, this is a perfect opportunity for Jeff Cobb to show up.
Yeah, right? Oh my God, I was waiting for it.
He confronted Martinez at the pay-per-view. Solo beat him to earn this title shot. And this is perfect. I almost thought maybe we're going to get another top prospect thing. Like, Cobb will interrupt this to cause a non-finish, you know, to get revenge on Solo beating him and to further his story with Punishment, and we'll get a triple threat or we'll get a rematch or something something to that effect. But
yeah. What a perfect moment that would have been to do it, which is just, I don't know. Those little missed opportunities just like nag at me a little bit. But yeah, I was waiting the whole time towards the end of this for that to happen, and it never did.
I know. I've been watching a lot of Lucha Underground lately. Like, I'm powering through season two. I'm almost finally done season two, trying to catch up to the current. And just their storytelling is so on point that every little things like this, they would always catch and always follow up on and tie in nicely. There's never any like missed opportunities with little.
I mean, yeah, no, tell me about it. I mean, people can quibble with the Destruction Tour from New Japan, but New Japan does a really good job of not wasting their opportunities when they get them for the type of run-ins that like are going to build the next wave of the story.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Well, and our last match, or opening match, this week's television, Four Corner Survival, Shane Taylor, Flip Gordon, Chris Sabin, and Eli Isom. Isom is back. He had a video wall, I noted that. Mm-hmm. He had music. So does this mean that he is officially graduated from the Future of Honor and he is now just a regular ROH roster?
I sure hope so.
It could be. He could be the next... following in the footsteps of Cheeseburger and Will Ferrell.
Sure. I mean, we need more guys so that, like, we get a little bit more of a train upwards. So, like, Eli has done a fair amount of time now on the, you know, top, like, the, you know, Future of Honor circuit. Like, it's time. It's time. Bring him out a little bit more.
But then what... Okay, so what does this mean, though, that now he's winning matches and Flip Gordon and Chris Sabin are just the guys in the background?
I mean... To an extent.
Yeah, I mean, so Isom pins Taylor with a roll-up. Okay. A kind of a continuation to him pinning Daniels 2 months ago or whatever, right? He managed to pull out another, like, nobody thought it would happen. He managed to do it when Shane Taylor takes a lot of losses. It doesn't hurt him all that much, I don't think. I thought Shane looked maybe the best in this match because he was one heel against three babyfaces, so he had a lot of moments to shine and really... show off his
diamonds. I agree. There were a lot of moments where the guys were kind of teaming up against Shane, and so Shane was standing alone in that way. And I thought Shane actually looked really good.
Yeah, so he looks strong. Isom picks up a surprise win. After the match, Shane gets his revenge, knocks out both Isom and Sabin. Gordon manages to get the upper hand. We got a bit of a showdown between them, and the commentators sort of heavily imply that we're going to get a Shane Taylor Flip Gordon feud.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's evident from that. And, okay, well, I mean, and there you go. Maybe that's your backdoor way of getting Shane Taylor and Bully Ray to you know, collaborate. Because Flip Gordon still has a feud with Bully Ray happening.
Or maybe he doesn't. Maybe this is the... You know, this is the way to get Flip away from Bully and into something different.
Maybe. And that would actually kind of disappoint me, because if we are going to, if you're going to have a match like you had with those guys at Death Before Dishonor, like, I expect some continuation here now. And maybe I don't want it, but I do want Flip to be able to avenge what happened to him. And if he's got to go through Shane and then Shane is dealing with Bully, like, that's a good way to give folks something different to do while also tying together a storyline that has, you know, is already in existence.
Yeah, or it could be something as simple as, you know, Flip comes out on TV in a couple of weeks, calls out Bully, and Shane comes out instead and says, no, don't worry about him, worry about me.
Yeah.
So you still get that detour, but without sacrificing Flip's integrity or whatever focus.
Yeah.
I couldn't help thinking, though, this match... Chris Sabin, this is what I was saying. I thought we'd come back to this. I worry about Sabin as a singles wrestler, because him and Flip are competing for the exact same space now.
Yeah.
Right? They're similar archetypes, similar positions on the card. But Flip has the bonus of, like, he's been on Being the Elite for a year now. He's already got that built-in big fan base. And his offense is a little bit more showy and flashy in the ring than Saban's.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you're right. And that kind of bums me out because, I mean, you're right. And I don't know what's going to happen to our delightful Mr. Saban following this TV title attempt. And you're right. They're kind of competing for the same, to occupy that same space. And I can only see Chris Saban getting pushed back in favor of them, like, continuing to highlight Flip Gordon as they did at the end of this match.
Well, again, not to go on and on about Lucha Underground, but I'm just watching a lot of it and I've been loving it. They do a lot of multi-man matches like this, like they'll book a four-way or a six-way, whatever. And every person involved is in that match for a reason and comes out of it with a new purpose or a new story or character development of something like that. So I was trying to think of, I thought of this match yesterday, trying to think of, like, well, how would LU book this one? We come out of it, okay, Shane and Flip Gordon are now in a feud with each other. That makes sense. That leaves Saban and Isom. Isom picked up the surprise win here. It's his second win in 2 months, but it was a surprise. It was a fluke win again, arguably, right? He got a roll up. He wasn't at whatever. Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe like next week or 2 weeks from now, we get a backstage with Saban and Isom, and Saban could be like, hey, congratulating him. Great, you won another match. Kind of a bit of a fluke win. You're going to need to, you know, come up with a real finishing move at some point. Maybe Saban offers to mentor him to an extent, reminds him that I used to run Search and Destroy and I mentored a bunch of dudes there and stuff like that. And then they start beating each other's corners for matches and then sets up tag matches as well. And also gets Saban on TV weeks when Isom's wrestling, gets Isom on weeks when Saban's wrestling. So we're not going another month, 2 months between Eli Isom appearances, things like that.
I like that. It makes a lot of sense for Chris Saban to have somebody who can kind of work with in that way, because, you know, that might have been Jonathan Gresham at some point, but now Jonathan Gresham has that, you know, strong alliance and mutual respect team with Jay Lethal. So obviously we're not going to see him and Saban working together very much. So it, you know, it's kind of neat, the idea of Saban being able to take a, you know, still very, like, green new guy under his wing as a veteran who is also kind of restarting his career.
Yeah, just an idea. Just something that came to
that me. Probably won't happen. We'll probably get more Flip storylines and less Chris Saban of anything, and I will be very sad.
Next time we see Isom, he'll probably be losing in, like, 6 minutes to Marty Scurll or something at a live event.
Probably, and I'll have to wait another 3 months to see the most adorable puppy in the puppy pile pop his little adorable puppy face out.
Well, we got one last email. This is from Matthew Yanez out of Bakersfield, California. He writes about the pay-per-view and about TV, so that's why I put it at the end, because I didn't know where to slot this into the program. Matthew asks, are we getting the long-awaited showdown between Ian Riccaboni and Bully Ray at Final Battle? I jumped out of my seat when Ian left the broadcasting booth to walk to the ring.
We are not.
No?
We're not.
What about Ian in a shark cage above the ring? Ian on a pole match.
Colt versus Bully Ray. Winner gets to keep Ian Riccaboni.
Or a gauntlet match where Bully has to get through Colt Cabana and Caprice Coleman and BJ Whitmer in order to get 5 minutes in the ring with Ian.
Yeah, no, Matthew.
That's booked the wrong way, because then the heel is battling against the...
When did Bully become the hero here?
I don't know. That's a big plot twist that's coming out in the next 2 weeks. We're going to find out that there's a huge thing and that Bully's the good guy. He was just misunderstood.
Bully kidnaps Ian Riccaboni, puts him in some kind of secret fortress guarded by Silas Young and Shane Taylor, and a bunch of the heroes of the story, including Colt Cabana, Flip Gordon, and others, will have to rescue Ian.
Yeah, he's more of a damsel in distress.
Yes.
Bully ties Ian to the train tracks, and Colt has to get there.
No, we're not going to see Ian Riccaboni. I I will. I'm afraid I'm going to eat my words here. We're not going to see it, but if we do, it would be not a good idea.
All right. Matthew continues. Lethal Osprey was the main course of the evening, plus dessert, but a small fart at the end with Matt
Shaven.
Sorry, he just is not there yet. The last thing I remember from him is him crying that he was the legal man in the six-man tag team championship match. I'm the legal man. The red balloons coming from the bottom of the ring was a really cool image, though.
I mean,
Emily, thoughts. I'll ask you for your thoughts and then right away interrupt
sure.
you. Sorry, I didn't hear that. When Vinny Marcellia brings the balloons in the ring and pops in people's ears, I hate it. Hate it. So dumb. But the image of the balloons just like coming up from under the ring at moments to signal that they're there, I actually do really like that. I do think it's cool.
I think it's a cool image, but for me, it means that I'm about to see Vinny Marcellia, and I immediately lose track of the cool image because I'm like, ah, no.
Well, there's that. But yeah, as for Taven like crying about being the legal man, I mean,
yeah, he was.
I'd be upset about that.
Look, that's part of Taven's thing.
They got screwed out of the titles again. There's no enforcer in ROH. The referees, as we saw from Todd Sinclair at Death Before Dishonor, can't be relied on to make the right decisions.
Right.
Joe Koff hasn't been seen in months. Like, it's got to be frustrating to work in a business where your coworkers are stealing stuff from you and there's nobody you can go.
Yeah, I mean, far be it for me to defend the unlikable, but like, just because Matt Shaven is not a likable character does not mean that his character isn't right. His character is right. His character is owed a title shot that he has been sidestepped for several times. They lost six-man tag team championships based on a fluke. And yeah, no, he has every reason. The Kingdom Conspiracy is like a running joke, but like it's for real that people like Matt Shaven is not being given the respect that he has earned through various matches that he has fought.
And Matt continues, I may not agree with Emily on Eli Isom being a cutie pie, but he won me over wrestling-wise in the four-corner match. Flip Gordon versus Shane Taylor is not a match I want to see, but if it must happen, then why not? At least it's a fresh matchup. And Mr. Adjectives, Chris Sabin, I like it. I feel it adds personality to him. He did a good job of being the fall guy for Punishment, which set him up with Jeff Cobb, plus Chris Sabin rules.
I agree with a lot of points, but Matthew, come on, look at that face on Eli. What other word can you think of other than cutie pie?
Also, if ROH is smart, they should sign Aaron Solo. He looked better than the last time I saw him. I felt he did a good job against Punishment. And Matthew concludes, sometimes I feel the ROH audience is just plain mean. Chanting lose some weight at Brian Malonis? Just not.
100% agree with you, Matthew. I really don't like that.
I didn't hear that. I must have missed that
one. I didn't hear it either, but if that's what they were chanting, I really don't like that. Especially the fact that, like, it's pro wrestling. You're going to see some big guys. Like, don't tell them to lose weight. Like, they're big guys. That's part of their gimmick. They're big guys, and they do big guy things. And don't cheapen it by, like, putting weird body image stuff into it. I really hate that, too. I've gotten extraordinarily lucky when I've gone to ROH shows that I've just been around in the right region of people in the audience that haven't been jerks. But I do know that that ROH audiences don't have the best reputations. That has not been my experience, but I don't want to like dismiss other people's experiences on that. Sometimes the chants are kind of mean and, yeah, it isn't cool. I agree.
All right. I'll let you know my thoughts on Canadian ROH crowds following the November 11th.
What are Canadian wrestling crowds like in general? Are they very polite?
I know in WWE crowds there's a long-running gag on ROH on WWE television where they referred to Canada as Bizarro Land because the Canadians would just cheer that the wrestlers that they liked rather than cheer the guys they were supposed to and boo the guys they were supposed to. They would cheer the people they like, especially if they're Canadian, right? Like, oh, Chris Jericho's a heel. You're supposed to boo him. It's like, no, he's Canadian.
Yeah.
Boo him. So, yeah. Toronto especially, Canada in general, kind of known as like a smart crowd, which these days I'm not cool with that. I'm all about like playing along with the show. Like, don't boo the good guy just to be cool. Like, if you like, if there's a guy who's doing like great heel work and you love
boo him,
boo him because you're like rewarding him for his hard work by cheering him. You're kind of like undercutting.
Yeah, you support the heel by booing them. That's like, that's something that the heels work really hard at to make you boo them. And if you keep cheering them, you are undoing that hard work. Besides, like, a lot of heel tactics are not worth like cheering. They are worth, you know, worthy of boos. So follow that, like follow that lead. I'm not a big fan of like the smarky reactions towards wrestlers. I enjoy a good heel and I'll praise them and talk about how great they are. And tweeners obviously are a little different, but like when you're on a match, when you're on a live show, like, you know, there's a certain code of rules that everybody follows. I really like the way that it's phrased in the New Japan put together a little handbook for fans, a adorable handbook for fans prior to the G1 final. And it included these cute, like, little simplistic illustrations of, like, you know, basic instructions for the audience and how to enjoy a wrestling match. And one of them is say boo to the heel wrestler. And now I say that very often during when watching wrestling, whether live or at home. If I'm with a friend or with a partner, we remind each other to say boo to the heel wrestler. That is what you have to do as an audience member.
Yes. Not actually like boo, but just boo.
Say boo. Say boo to the heel wrestler.
It's Matt Taven.
Boo. Matt Taven, thank you.
Our next ROH live event on Honor Club, Glory by Honor, October 12th out of Baltimore, Jay Lethal versus Silas Young for the world title. Cody and the Young Bucks versus SCU for the six-man titles. So much for my theory about Kaz sitting on the side. He'll be back wrestling in a week and a half.
Wow.
Maybe he shows up that night and they say, hey, you can't compete. It's a hand.
After what felt like a kind of quiet, like, post all-in September, waiting for Destruction to start, waiting for ROH to kind of pick up steam again, October is just insane.
Oh, in November, ROH has, like, a bunch of live events. The Global Wars Tour, Survival of the Fittest. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But before then, next week on television, it's the return of Coast to Coast.
Yay!
Finally. Shaheem Ali has healed from his car accident. He's back. Coast to Coast versus the Kingdom. Fun fact, Emily.
Yes.
The last team Coast to Coast faced before getting injured back in May was...
Oh, hey.
So we're picking up right where we left off.
Great. That's actually not a bad idea. Kind of like resetting the clock for Coast to Coast.
Yeah. Also, Marty Scurll versus Shane Hurricane Helms, part two.
Yay.
And Cheeseburger versus Little Willie in a fight without honor. I am very intrigued to see.
Intrigued is the right word. I'm going to go with that.
All right. Thank you for listening to our show. Thank you, computer, for actually working finally after an hour.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device, For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.